guest is one of the more underrated players in Virginia history, likely because he played at the end of the Pete Gillen era. So not exactly the most successful wins and loss record in Virginia history, but nevertheless, incredible scorer, great guy. We loved being able to catch up with him. It was so cool to hear from him and kind of get answers on what exactly happened during that time. So it was almost like we interrogated him, so apologies if it sounds that way. Also of note, Devin's internet connection is spotty at best, so you know there's some jumping around in here, some pauses that is a little, it doesn't flow as well as our normal podcast, but we tried to piece it together the best we could. Also had Sean Singletary join the Focus Corner. I took that little clip, we talked about Devin Smith, and put it here in the intro. So enjoy. If you have questions, comments, obviously hit us up, Virginia Locker Room Access forums. You can find that link in the description, and here you go. Enjoy.
Yeah, is the icon of UVA basketball. Yeah. You don't get no respect. Devin Smith. Man, I never seen nobody get buckets the way they do get buckets.
Yeah, that's what we said. You know, he's underrated. He's underrated.
It was an unathletic looking. But I remember my first memory that I know he was nice. It was that obviously he used to come to pick up and come to practice and get buckets. But when we went to Iowa State, at Iowa State, dude dropped 40, 44, 45, 46, 40-something on ESPN. Yeah. I'm talking about like when we was at Iowa State, the floor was like, you know, the crowd got hyped, but the floor was shaking. Like, I don't know if you've ever been nervous in any situation, but – man, that joint was shaking, and I was so nervous, man. I just dribble up. We used to run away in Atlantic X, and I just dribble.
We need him.
dribble, and throw that joint to Devin. He put that joint right in the basket, bro. Like Devin, that's my man. Devin is awesome. He had a great career overseas.
Devin Smith now joins us. Devin, how are you?
I'm well, man. Appreciate you guys having me.
Thanks so much for coming on. So you you started your career, or you grew up in Delaware, correct?
Yeah, I grew up in Delaware. I moved to Delaware when I was in middle school. So we lived right across the border in Pennsylvania before that. So it's basically the same area.
Delaware is not such a big state, but yet they churn out a couple of good ball players.
Yeah, for sure. I think now that there's more options and more, you know, more avenues to take to get noticed, you know, you see more and more guys playing high level basketball. But, you know, back when I was coming out of high school, you just didn't have that.
Yeah. Marquis, you know who the most famous person ever to live in Delaware is?
The famous, most famous person or most famous basketball player?
Most famous person. And it's not basketball. He didn't live there very long. Maybe 2 years.
Who's that?
Bob Marley. You don't know
that? Bob Marley.
Yeah, Bob's mom moved to Wilmington. I assume it's Wilmington.
Wilmington.
And Bob spent a year or two in Delaware. That's where he got the R&B influence and the reggae.
Look at that. I didn't know that one.
There you go.
That's wild.
Me and Doug are big Bob Marley fans. Love that. So you go from Delaware – and you're on the high school scene that season there, and I imagine you're doing really well.
So yeah, I mean the high school scene here, my high school was one of the best ones during my 4 years in high school. We went to the state championship every year, won twice. Wow. But you know, I just didn't have, you know, the notoriety, you know, around the country. So long story short, like after my senior year, I took the unofficial to Manhattan College. And they didn't have any more scholarships, so they wanted me to pay for a year, and then I would be on scholarship the following year, which I didn't want to do. And I had one scholarship offer from UMBC.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So
who was the coach there then at UMBC?
Man, I don't even remember because I just knew I didn't want to go. Like I just felt it wasn't right. It was like at the end of the summer. And I wasn't feeling it. So my option was, I thought about prep school and considered going to St. Thomas More. And then my brother, who was actually already at JUCO, and was two classes ahead of me, redshirted when Reggie Evans was there. So he still had 3 years to play. Signed with Idaho. Their coach got fired, and he tried to get out. And the NCAA told him he would have to sit out wherever he transferred. So instead of sitting out, he went back to JUCO and asked me if I wanted to go too. And that's how I ended up in Coffeyville.
Wow. Did you visit UMBC at all?
No, never went. And I mean, I had conversations with them on the phone, and you know, they were putting the pressure on, and I really didn't, you know, give a lot of thought to it. So when the opportunity came up for me to play with my brother, you know, I just couldn't pass that one up.
Junior college basketball is different.
Yeah, definitely, man. It's a grind. And you know, back in 2001, like, you can only have 6 out-of-state players in Kansas. But when I got there, we had 11. and 4 guys had already played the year before. So you talk about some pickup.
Yep.
That was battles every day. Man, that was a war every day.
So did guys know they had to go home?
That's what it was.
I mean, like, all right, we had a few. You get a wide range of people at JUCO. So we had a few guys get kicked out. And so at the end, it came down to like 8 guys. Right. And there was really only 3 spots. And, you know, everybody was fighting for those 3 spots because my brother and 2 other guys were already a given. And they had 1 guy who redshirted the year before, and he wanted to play. So it was some battles, man, but I appreciated that grind, and it just brings out a different side of you having to go through that, that's for sure.
So what happened to the dudes that didn't make the team?
I mean, a few of them stayed and just redshirted, but we had 1 guy leave, but everybody else kind of stayed around, you know, and just went to school, still practiced, they just couldn't play.
I did a short bid at Trinidad State Junior College in Colorado. Okay. I know the deal. That environment is tough.
Yeah, we ride in 15 passenger vans, 6-7 hours on the road. It's tough. Our per diem was like $5.
Yeah. but that's a different crew. I mean, that's just a different climate. Like, you talk about the range of characters that you get when you go to Trinidad State. I mean, when you go to junior college, right? Whether it's Trinidad State or Hutchinson in Kansas or Coffeyville. Yeah. It's just guys aren't always – I mean, there's reasons why guys go to junior college, right? It's sometimes because they're not noticed, sometimes because of grade, sometimes because of character.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, we were playing against one guy. He was like 29. Yeah. He had did like 8 years for like armed robbery. So you had some guys in JUCO that were just like, man, they were grown men.
Yeah. What were you thinking? And when you were there, in terms of like, hey, where is this going to take me? Did you have your vision on, hey, this is my path to big time D1 ball? Or were you like, oh God, what did I get myself into?
You know, I kind of felt like, you know, me being a competitor, like I felt I was better than my brother. So I'm like, if he got these options, I can figure it out. And once I got there, and it was so many guys, you know, I was like, I didn't come out here not to play. I'm like, if I can't play, I don't want to be in Coffeyville, Kansas. I don't know how many people have been to Coffeyville, Kansas, but it's not a lot going on in Coffeyville, Kansas. So I'm like, I don't want to be here if I can't play. So I made sure I was going to be one of those 6 guys. And, you know, like, it started happening quickly. Having Reggie Evans come from there, we had another guy that went to Wisconsin. And Roy Boone went to Wisconsin. So you had some guys who had came out of there the few years before I got there. So coaches were coming in to see guys.
Did you plan on being there for 2 years or 1 year?
I was trying to be one and done. I mean, because I was a qualifier, so I didn't need to go to JUCO. That was just the path that I took. Like, I had the grades and the SAT scores, so I was fine with that.
So when you got there, started playing, were you getting playing time immediately? Did you start?
Yeah, so initially, like, I was, like, coming off the bench, and the older guys were playing a bigger role. But by, like, the time we started playing regular season games, like I was starting and I was playing okay, but about 4 or 5 games in, like, you know, we lost 2 games that year. We lost like our 9th game and our last game, lost in championship to Dixie from Utah. And, you know, as we started playing, we have like a gymboree, which we hosted in around Christmas, where teams from all over come, there's coaches from all over. And as, you know, we continue to do well, you know, everybody started coming in and just getting that recognition.
Who was starting to recruit you and how early?
So I was one of the first schools just because our coach had that relationship with Alford already. And then Oklahoma was recruiting me pretty heavy early on, but they had a few guys, and Calvin Sampson wanted me to redshirt when I got there because they had E.B. Erie and another wing guy. And I wasn't really trying to do that. So after them, like, really Virginia was one of the last schools that came in. You know, I had Florida State and Kansas and Illinois. And, you know, Virginia was like one of the last schools.
Did Gillen come knocking on the door himself, or was it one of the assistant coaches?
No, Gillen came to Coffeyville, Kansas.
What was that meeting like? What did he say to you?
It was good. I mean, like, he was really animated, you know, his character. But
could anybody understand him in Coffeyville?
You know, everybody was just like a fast talker. Everybody was surprised to see him because you see him on TV and then you see him in person and guys were like, man, his head is really that big. You know, like, he's a salesman. Like, he's really good. One of the assistants, Walt Fuller, had a relationship with like a family friend of mine. So that helped out they had a connection from Drexel. And, you know, really, my first option was Illinois, but they were recruiting me and a big man named Aaron Spears. I'll never forget it. And he went on a visit before me and committed on his visit. So that's when, yeah. So I went on my visit to Kansas and loved it, but I just wasn't feeling the Midwest. Like, my last few weeks there, they were like, 2 tornado warnings, the sirens went off.
Yeah.
And I just felt like it wasn't for me at that time, you know. And my brother was considering going to like Illinois State. So if he would have stayed there, I might have went to Kansas. But he ended up going to Iona, and I went on my visit to Virginia and, you know, loved the campus. I felt like it was really the most diverse school that I had went to. So I loved it.
That cost you a lot of money not going to Kansas, though.
You can do not really. I'm,
not really?
I mean,
I'm talking about that immediate money.
Oh, no. I mean, like, I don't know.
Couldn't do it.
You know, like, I never really considered that or heard about that, but I don't know. Maybe they are paying guys. I don't know.
Yeah, who knows?
So what did you know about Virginia at that point? Like, through the recruiting, like, had you ever followed any games? Did you know of the style? Did you know, like, about Pete Gillen? Or
I didn't know a lot about Pete. I mean, I grew up in ACC territory. So, like, Big East, ACC, that's the basketball I watch. And, then, you know, that's something that I always wanted to be a part of. I loved Georgia Tech growing up, seeing all those guys come through there. And, yeah, I mean, I had seen some games on TV. Like, I saw the game against Duke when they beat Duke the year before. They were, like, number 4. Virginia was, like, up to number 4. And that's really all I knew. I mean, I didn't know a lot of the guys personally or anything like that. But it just felt right. You know, I was back on the East Coast, close but not too close to home. Playing in the ACC, got an opportunity to really, you know, move into the lineup with Roger, you know, leaving and going to the NBA. So
it felt good. Dude, what was like the disconnect for you? Like, did you just get that much better in your prep school year, meaning your JUCO year? Or were you just flying so far under the radar in high school that nobody, because you said you qualified, et cetera, et cetera. It just seems like a disconnect that all of a sudden everybody wants you.
Yeah, I mean, like, I felt I did get better. You know, my senior year in high school, we got a new coach, and he wanted me to play in the post. So it's like,
yep,
contrast of styles that, you know, for me, I want to win. So I just did what I had to do for the team for us to win. And, yeah, I mean, like, a lot of coaches weren't rolling through Delaware recruiting guys back then. I mean, we had a few guys, you know, come out of there, like LaRon Prophet went. We had a few guys at Xavier and, you know, Jermaine Melly at Villanova, but they weren't rolling in there. You know, some of those guys left to get noticed. And even like AU programs, like we had one on the Adidas circuit that, you know, we weren't winning a lot of games, but we were going, you know, to big time in Vegas and stuff like that. So I don't know. I mean,
everybody's rolling through Coffeyville, Kansas, but not Delaware. I get it.
Yeah. I mean, JUCO was hot back then. You figure.
Yeah. Yeah.
Back then you had Tony Allen and those guys in JUCO. And in our conference, we had Robert Whaley, who left and like ended up playing for the Jazz. So like you had some players, and we had 10 guys off of my team play D1 in JUCO. So,
oh wow,
how big was Coffeyville? How many students?
I would say on campus, you probably had 750 at most, but you probably had 2,500 students, something like that.
So you go from 750 students or 2,500 students, and you get to Charlottesville, and are you like, this is heaven?
Yeah. And you know what? Before we get to me getting on campus, like, when I left JUCO, UVA didn't take all my credits.
Oh.
So they needed to take 24. They took 23. So I had to take a class at Delaware Tech over the summer to get in. So instead of being able to spend the summer in Charlottesville, I had to stay home, and that's when I hurt my knee. So I tore my meniscus playing with the University of Delaware players at home, and I was taking a class, and they had got me a job, like somebody from one of the alumni helped me get a job, which I was just sitting around collecting a check. But yeah, I mean, I was home and I didn't get surgery from May until I got on campus at the end of August.
Yikes.
So then you land. So you, what month did you get to UVA?
So I got to UVA probably, you know, last week of August. And then after maybe 2 days, got meniscus surgery. And my first couple weeks was going around campus on crutches, trying to make it work.
Right.
But it was definitely a change of atmosphere, you know, going from just that small town, small campus life to living a life in Charlottesville. It was definitely a high upgrade.
Wow.
What did you enjoy most outside of the basketball court? About on the grounds of UVA?
Really just hanging out. I mean, you know, we had a wild crew from time to time, but just during that time. But yeah, just really hanging out. I mean, some of my friends have stayed off campus. Like, I'm closest with one of the walk-ons that was there with me my first year. He had a place off campus, just hanging out there, listening to music, hanging out. But I'm really like I'm a homebody, man. I don't really do a whole lot.
And then what was the first day of practice like?
For me, by the time I got to practice, it was probably about a month into practice, which was good because nobody knew what to expect because I hadn't played with any of those guys. So nobody knew what to expect, and it was good to come in and just show what I could do.
Did Gillen say, hey, we need you to do this, you're going to have this impact on the team, you're going to probably play about 20 minutes a game, 30 minutes a game?
No. I mean, and I think that was one of the issues that we had. It's like nobody really knew what was expected of them. And a lot of guys weren't held accountable on and off the floor. and well and drop off, because it wasn't that the foundation like, you know, you have now.
Right. What it's looked like going down the roster. I'm not, T-Dubs knows the team much better than I do, growing up in Charlottesville. But when I look up the names and look up the years of guys, one of my questions I have is, was there senior leadership on that team from the players?
Well, I mean, when I first got there, you know, there was really only Travis was the only senior. And, you know, he did all right. But, you know, at the same time, he was worried about his next season. You know, am I going to get drafted? Where am I going to play professionally? So I think it did, you know, affect the rest of the guys, because it was kind of a – him and Gillen had a little bit of friction going on, you know, so that didn't help.
Yeah. And you end up being – I think you were the third highest scorer on the team that year?
I believe maybe so. And, you know, I think we had a pretty decent team, you know, and for there to be a lot of new guys, because Ty Billett was just playing, Nick was just playing, Derek Byers was coming in with me. So, I mean, we had, you know, a decent roster, but we just didn't click all the time, because there was nobody really knew what was given from game to game.
What about Jason Rogers on senior night? What do you remember about that?
Man, J-Raj came out dunking, hitting threes. And but you know what? He used to do that in practice, but he would never play. And that's what guys didn't understand. It's like, why is he not playing? Like, they would give him an assignment as an opposing team player, and he'd be lighting us up. Dunking threes and come to the game, and he wouldn't even play. Huh. But I felt good for him, man, because at least he got, you know, like a solid 2 weeks to showcase that he should have been playing.
He did, and boy did he! And that was like all the people that were already on the fence with Gillen were so upset when he came in and dominated that senior night, and then the rest of the season played really well. And people were like, "This is a problem," and it was just like, you know. That was all the rage for the – you know, you never ended hearing about that. Like, it never stopped, right? You always heard, what about Jason Rogers? Yeah. But he was doing that in practice. That's interesting that he was just getting it in.
Yeah. Yeah, he was playing well. And it wasn't like it was a surprise to us, you know. It was a surprise that, you know, they kept him in the game just because we're used to him doing unpredictable things, especially with the timeouts and stuff like that.
But, right. Yeah.
you know, it was definitely good to see, man, because J-Raj is a great dude.
And what about the end of Majestic Maps' career? I mean, you saw him. What did you see from him at that point when you came on?
You know, it was tough because, like, he was one of the closest guys to me on the team. And, you know, it was always that balance of, like, the situation with his knee. He was playing well. He still could play. But I felt like they wanted to push him out just because, you know, you had Sean coming in. And I felt like they didn't want him around to kind of still be wanting to play. I don't know. It was a funny situation, but he still could play and contribute to the team, which I think he showed at times the year before. But from my point of view, I feel like they pushed him out.
Right. Yeah, that was a tough one. I mean, a couple injuries, and then with Sean coming in, that definitely probably wasn't easy. And he did. Then he went on to what? He went on to he transferred and went to D.
He transferred to a D2 and played D2. Well.
Yeah, played really well. Go ahead, Fred.
A bunch of guys we've talked to, it sounds like a theme with Coach Gillen, Pete, where once you're like a third or fourth year, in your fourth year, he's like looking out for everybody else coming in. You know, I think Willie Dersh gave us that story where he was a third and fourth year when Gillen came in, and he's trying to build his program from the bottom up instead of the top down. I don't know how you – I can't tell. Was your team tight and you just had a disconnect with the coach, or were you guys just all – on different pages. I'm trying to get a sense of that from you telling us.
I mean, I think like team wise, we had a good relationship. We had good chemistry. I think at times, you know, a lot of us were selfish because we didn't know what to expect from the coaching staff. So yeah. We were trying to figure out like what to do for ourselves.
All right.
And I feel like every year there was an issue. Like my senior year when Jason Clark fell off the team, like now there's something else. Now everybody else has to rotate and figure out like how to fill that void as a power forward. And we started playing small ball, which wasn't popular back then.
Right.
And then we went through a period of games where we just holding the ball. Like we really legit like holding the ball until like 10 seconds left on the shot clock. We would play pick and roll and try to score. And we were like, what are we doing? Yeah. You know, so it was a lot of guys were frustrated. Especially the younger guys like Derek Byers, he was my roommate. He was always frustrated. And the new guys coming in, he brought in, you know, like Gary Forbes and those guys. And without him, you know, giving them a platform and telling them like what he wanted from them, like they felt like he needed to come in and like save the program and run things. And that wasn't the case, you know. And without that voice telling him otherwise, like guys didn't know what to do.
So Derek ended up transferring out, right? Did he end up at Vanderbilt?
Yeah, Vanderbilt.
And like yeah. Because he's a Memphis. And, he's a Memphis guy.
Yeah, and went there and was SEC Player of the Year.
He was incredible. Wow. He showed flashes at UVA. He just didn't get the minutes. Same with Gary Forbes. He was like his first year. Everybody was like, "This guy's gonna be all ACC. He's gonna take over." Yeah. And same deal with the inconsistency of, you know, his. I don't even want to say it was his playing time. I don't know. Just like he didn't get it.
I felt like, you know, part of it was like, and this is something I had to learn, you know, just like on a professional level. It was like, guys, times are different now, you know, like guys have personal trainers in middle school and are working out on their own, like outside, away from the team and with the team. Like that's something we didn't have. And like, we weren't taught, you know, like
right.
how to do things a certain way to really right. get better. You know what I mean? Like, and then we go in the weight room and everybody's doing the same thing. I'm like,
yep.
I can't do what Travis does. Like he's squatting all this stuff and drinking these shakes. Like I don't need that.
Right.
Right.
So there was no, like you didn't have that individual attention. Like I think guys get now to really, you know, get better.
Yeah. Like, it looks you guys were looking, you're looking for it from somebody and not getting it back. It sounds like to me. If that makes any sense.
But did practices change at all in any of your years while you were there?
No, we pretty much did the same stuff. I mean, it would be the same deal. You know, you start out practice. Back then, it was like the first week was like 3-hour practices. Yeah. And then, you know, we would do the same drills and the same stuff. And I don't know. I mean, like, it became like the same routine. You know, like a few of us had like stuff we would do on our own. Like my senior year, like me and Sean would get in the gym on our own on Saturdays, like on off days, like after practice. And like we didn't, like now you always have access to a floor and everything like that. But back then U-Haul, like everybody was using U-Haul.
Yeah, you had to break
it. You might go in there to shoot and there's no lights on.
Right.
Yeah.
The level of intensity with new guys coming in, the assistant coaches, everything was pretty much the same.
Yeah, I mean, like, our best basketball would be in the summertime, really, because guys would really be able to compete, and we would have guys come back, and that was really the best basketball.
What was your favorite play that Coach Gillen drew up?
What's the
best play he had?
The only play I remember is he called something Atlanta X. That's really the only play I remember.
Atlanta X?
So it would be like, all right, a middle pick and roll, four in the, with the five and the one. And basically, like, the four would pop up as the pick and roll is happening. Like, the four would come from the baseline to the three-point line as the five is rolling out of the pick and roll. That's the only play I remember.
Right.
Because he used to call it at the end of the game, it was like, give Todd Dillard the ball, run a lane X, and everybody else would stand there.
And that was your third year or your second year?
No, that was my first year. But we ran Atlanta X every year.
That's all three years.
Yeah.
No, yeah, except Billet wasn't there your fourth year, right?
No, he wasn't there.
Yeah, we ran a little bit.
Yeah, we ran a little bit different stuff with Sean just because, like, we didn't have that type of player before. And that was really the only change. You know, like, we would run, like, flat screens in the middle of the floor for Sean. But that was pretty much it.
Your second year at UVA, you guys were undefeated going in the ACC play, I think. I'm pretty sure, based on the research I did. Were you guys excited about, okay, now we got a pretty good team? Or did you think that you guys weren't going to do well going into ACC play?
No, I mean, we always felt like we had a good team and we were going to do well. It was just, I don't know. I mean, like, my junior year, I didn't practice after, like, January because I ended up getting surgery on my back. So half the time, I was just playing in the games.
Right.
Like, I would be in the training room with the trainers, half a practice, come out and, like, maybe do shooting. That was really it. But outside of that, like, we had promise. You know, we brought in new guys who brought new energy early in the year. Like, Gary Forbes was playing well. You know, TJ Bannister ended up getting some time. Like, we had promise, and we were excited. It just came down. Really, it came down to our last game against Maryland.
Right.
And Ty Billow went, like, 0 for 15.
I'm gonna change it up. I'm gonna show you the schedule here,
because we at the end of the year we beat Wake Forest.
So this is let's go back to your sophomore year, first year at UVA. Like, yeah, it starts. Year. Yeah, this is the first year. I want to talk about this. You know, you guys Maui Invitational at the Lahaina Civic Center, number 15, Kentucky. You guys beat them. You play that zone. You play that. I remember you play that matchup zone, threw them off a little bit. Y'all get the win. What was it like after that, going into before the championship game? Were y'all like feeling yourselves like, all right, here we go. We're gonna run the table? Or was it, what was the mood?
Yeah, we felt real good. After that Kentucky game, that was a big win. I mean, they were a really good team. And for us to win the way we did, like, we felt really good going into the Indiana game, which ended up being a good game.
You hit a couple threes to end that Kentucky. Basically, you hit those threes to end that Kentucky game to really pull away that one, which was incredible. Yeah.
Indiana was the first time I really heard, like, scouting. You know, like, they were on the bench, like, yelling what guys do, where they want to go, make them go this way. I was like, well, why don't we have that?
that's awesome. What about – and do you remember the people talking about the Chaminade game and Virginia's history with that when you guys played them on that Monday? Do you remember that at all or no?
Yeah, that it was so much – they put so much on that game. Yeah, they even bought Ralph out, you know, came out from Maui, was riding around in a Malibu.
That was awesome. Okay, yeah, so Indiana happens. That game was close. Y'all are still feeling pretty good. You're 3-1. You beat a top 15 team, and then you go to Michigan State for the big. What was that like?
Well, Michigan State was the first game we went to where it was like 5,000 people. Michigan State, I just felt like they were just throwing so many bodies at us. It was like body after body after body that we just couldn't match. Every time we looked up, there was a new big guy coming in the game.
Yeah.
And we really only had one big man. That was Travis.
So then you take those two losses And then you come through, and Pete had a, you know, he always scheduled relatively soft, but you had Georgetown in here. You guys got Georgetown. You come into ACC play. And what was the mood like at that point when you go into ACC play?
I mean, we were feeling all right. You know, me being my first year in the ACC, I didn't know what to expect. We knew, like, our first – that first stretch, you know, we had a lot of good teams. So we feel like you got to try to get – we needed that North Carolina game. I remember that one.
Yeah, that was a really good one.
Yeah.
And then at number one Duke, going into Cameron your first time. Do you remember that?
That was probably the best we played at Cameron.
Yeah.
While I was there. Like, that was
– for sure.
That was a good game. While I was in school – the best we played at Cameron, for sure.
What do you remember about that game? Do you remember that?
I just remember it being up and down. The Duke game I remember is the home game with Dante Jones acting the fool.
Right, doing the push-ups.
doing the push-ups. It was something like I wasn't in the game and I couldn't see at the time. Like, I didn't see it until I saw the highlights on TV.
Oh, wow. And we're coming down here in this, you know, rough on the road. You know, we had a stretch there. We just weren't good on the road. We did decent at home. Yeah. You think part of that was the preparation of going on the road, or the change of pace, or was it just like the youth on the team, you think?
I think it was the youth. You know, like the year before, they were so much better because they had – They had, you know, Roger Mason, Chris Williams, and those guys that kind of, like, carried a load. And, you know, young guys add, you know, the extra push. But I just think we weren't built for it, you know. We had really one upperclassman who had been through it. And the rest of the guys were, I guess, a little naive about it. You know, just having that success with the year before, not knowing that they would have to carry the load.
Right. And then you go into the ACC tournament, play Duke again. I remember it was a good game. And then you close out at least the AC in the regular tournament, 15-15. You make the NIT. Yeah. Did you guys want to be in the NIT? Was there a conversation about that?
You know, we were okay with it. Just because you get a chance to keep playing. But, you know, that it wasn't like we were excited about it. You know what I mean? And then I remember going to St. John's and Marcus Hatton just destroying us.
Yeah, that for the people looking, I mean, listening and now looking at the schedule at St. John's, 63-73.
I think Marcus Hatton had like 34.
Oh.
We didn't have an answer for that, dude.
And then just quick breakdown. Here's the roster. Your first year, you had Derek Byers as a first year, Nick Vanderlane, who ended up transferring. I mean, a lot of these guys ended up transferring. Yeah. When you look at it, right? Derek Byers, Nick Vanderlane, Keith Jennifer, a bunch of guys left. There's Jason Rogers, Majestic Map. All right, so then who out of this, what do you remember about some of these guys? Is there anyone that sticks out that you feel like doesn't get the props that they deserve? I feel like Todd Billett never gets mentioned. He could shoot it.
Yeah, like Todd could play. I just think he needed somebody next to him that could kind of take the pressure off of him a little bit, handling the ball all the time, because he wasn't really a playmaker. You know, he was somebody that could make shots and make plays for himself. If he had somebody next to him that would take that pressure off, I think he would have played better.
Get rid of the ball and not have the ball in his hands the whole time.
And Keith Jennifer.
How was he on the Atlanta X, though? He had it down?
Who? Todd Billett?
Todd. I'm just kidding.
Todd was letting that thing go.
It's funny. I'm looking at Todd right here. He scored like 16 a game at Rutgers, 12, 16, Virginia, 13, and 9 a game. That's a weird.
Yeah. Like, Todd's a good player. He just wasn't a point guard. Like, he wasn't he wasn't gonna get guys shots in the right spot and run the team. You know, that just wasn't who he was. And you know, I think it hurt him some, you know, at his time at Virginia.
And this is what Mark was referring to. Your second year, you come through, you clean up all through the Coastal Carolina, and you go to NC State. I remember this. The one after that's the one I remember. The two Iowa State games, we played them like the next year too, at Iowa State. That was you went off that game. I remember that. But what about this season? Anything in particular stick out to you?
I mean, like, we went through that rough stretch, and then we started, you know, beating teams down the stretch, and it kind of like put us almost towards like 7-9 in the ACC, which back then would pretty much get you in the tournament.
All right.
Yeah. So that Maryland game was like the game for us to kind of push to get in.
Do you remember what was the mood like? I remember that was a huge game. What was the mood like going there? Were there nerves, or was it?
I think
it was like a playing game.
Yeah, I think it was a little too much. You know, guys put too much pressure on the game instead of just playing it. And yeah, I mean, after we beat Clemson, like, then you run across Duke again, and it's like, come on, this again.
Right. I mean, you lost by 10.
Yeah.
And then at that point, did you guys have a conversation? Like, did you guys want to be in this NIT again, or were you?
Yeah, I think the mood for this was a little bit different from the year before, because like we felt like we were close to making a tournament.
But yeah.
Going into that Maryland game, we felt like we were there, and we just missed the opportunity. So we still wanted to play from that, and winning the ACC tournament against Clemson, which was a tough game.
And overtime. You know,
playing well against Duke. Like, we felt like we still had basketball left in us. And, you know, we missed the opportunity to make the tournament, but, like, let's carry on and, you know, build towards next year.
This is your fourth year, right?
This is
your last year.
And so had Gillen had a conversation with you at all about, now you're the senior leader, fourth year leader, now we need you to step up? There's still, isn't a conversation?
No, I don't remember having the conversation. It was kind of like, we take it upon ourselves to try to, you know, lead the guys, you know, me and Elton in particular. And, you know, like, this was like really the first time where we spent like the majority of the off season, like, all together. Hmm. Like, I was always in Charlottesville. Like, I rarely went home for extended periods of time. But, you know, we had a freshman in, like, Sean and those guys were there pretty much most of the summer. So we felt good going into the year, just like our connection as a team, and felt like we had something that we never had before in Sean. And, yeah, I mean, we were confident going into the year. I remember playing well. And then after the Arizona game, we were really feeling good.
Yeah.
Because we felt like, all right, you know, now is our opportunity to be a better team than what we were, and then try to be consistent. And I remember getting injured against Loyola Marymount, and then not playing again until I think Miami or Duke. And
it was this Iowa State game I was talking about. This one, I think you had 36, was it? Does that sound familiar? 40? Yeah, that was incredible. Didn't pull it out, but I remember that was like March and December, because that game was so intense. Do you remember that atmosphere?
That was rocking. Like, that was probably top five college arena, top three, really. Like, the crowd get into it, like, you could feel that gym shaking almost.
Yeah, it was intense. Let's see, there's a box score here. 11 for 18, 40 points. Elton Brown had 13.
Damn.
And then, let's see, J.R. Reynolds.
40 points and 10 rebounds.
And then on the other side, Curtis Stinson had 30. Yeah, that was impressive. And that goes down in the record books, 40 on the road.
I mean, has that ever been done at Virginia? 40 on the road?
And Barry Parkhill and probably Buzzy Wilkinson, maybe.
Buzzy, maybe. I'm saying, like, All right, Barry's modern enough. 40 on the road?
That's incredible.
Yeah. I think B Nice had 36 at Wake Forest once.
Yeah. Were you in a zone? Do you remember that game as being like, I'm in a zone, just give me the damn ball? Or was it?
You know, like, surprisingly, like, the majority of that happened like 5 minutes left in the first half and the first 5 minutes of the second half. And then they went boxing one.
That's right.
For the rest of the, like, we're like probably like eight, probably the last 10 minutes of the game, they were in a boxing one. Yeah, I remember just like being in the zone and still wanting the ball, even the boxing one. And, you know, sometimes right. It just doesn't happen that way.
So, in the boxing one, did you get up any shots?
I got a few up in transition, you know, in half court. There was a couple times where I could have got, you know, some open looks, but the extra pass didn't make its way to me.
That boxing one's when you got to go to the offensive boards. That's how you get them.
I'm going to steal a question. I know Dougie Fresh is thinking of this question. What play did Pete Gillen run for you in the boxing one set?
Atlanta X. I already know. Atlanta X. You made my day. Now.
For me? Nothing.
In the box.
And then, so there's a couple, like Wake Forest, number five, we lose. Do you remember that game at all? I mean, they were at peak power at that point.
Yeah, they were peak power. Like, I didn't play in Wake, Western Kentucky, Georgia Tech. I played Miami. So I remember, like, you know, the young guys coming in. It was tough, you know. Wake's
– Chris Paul Wake, is going. You know,
yeah, they're at the top level right now. And then now, like, the young guys are thrown in. Like, Adrian Joseph is thrown into the starting lineup.
Yeah.
And – yeah, things have started to change from there.
Yeah, because then we end up losing four in a row. Georgia Tech, Miami, at Duke, at Maryland. We sneak one at Clemson at home. But then the landslide, you know, at that point, it's like, all right, what is the mood of the team at that point? You said there's a lot of frustration. Things are getting changed around. We start running that stall ball, whatever that was.
We hit the stall ball at NC State. That's when you see the scores go down. That's right. When we hit the stall ball.
Right here at NC State.
Yeah.
And did you guys know that was coming, or was there a team meeting or anything to talk about this?
We just started doing it in practice. He was talking about it, and we're like, okay. I didn't know it was going to be the whole game. I thought, like, maybe we would throw it in here and there. It was pull it out. And, like, guys would just be dribbling. Like, it was the end of the game. You run out the clock. You're just dribbling, run the play.
So it's a low-key four corners with a shot clock, basically?
Yeah.
Yeah, pretty much. It was something like that.
Wow. I wonder what caused that shift all of a sudden. Was it the North Carolina game?
I don't know. I mean, North Carolina game was probably the most embarrassed I've been in college.
Yeah.
Like, that was a beatdown, and they let us know about it being a beatdown too. So I was a little pissed about that one.
I mean, for those not looking, it's 76-110 at U-Haul too. I mean, that's where people were really upset, because that's a place where you don't lose like that.
No, not especially not Carolina.
No. Yeah.
So I'm guessing there was some kind of meeting. After that North Carolina game, that we need to change the style, or was it maybe Providence on the road? We get they almost put up 100.
Yeah, so we play Providence, and then they probably talk about the stall ball, and that's what we go to for those three games, and we surprisingly won all three.
And it's true,
right? I mean, it did kind of work, and then. And then Carolina, you go to Carolina now with this new stall ball. Were you guys thinking, all right, we got a chance, or were you like, this is just a hoax?
Yeah, I mean, we felt like, you know, we were getting these wins, but it wasn't going to work long term.
All right.
And, you know, Carolina's playing fast at that time. You know, they had all their horses. They won the championship that year. And, yeah, I mean, that Maryland game was a really good game at home, a game we should have won. Then from there, it was kind of downhill the rest of the way.
And so this season ends. What does that do for your pro prospects in terms of, like, being, you know, in a system that you didn't necessarily win a ton? Were you getting looks? Did you get a bunch of NBA calls? Or,
you know, I had a few, but I think that had something to do with it, just, like, not being at a winning program, especially that last year. You know, I had a decision to make because I needed – I had – my agent had set up, you know, back then, if you didn't go to the Combine in Chicago, like, they used to have another big workout that a bunch of people would come to. So I was going to go to that, but I had to stay – I had one more class in order to graduate. So I stayed and did the first summer session at UVA instead of going so I could get my degree.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, that's smart though.
And then, so then you get your degree, and then what were your options at that point?
Yeah, I mean, like, I get my degree, finish school, and I go to Indianapolis to train because that's where my agent was based. I go there to train, and, you know, we just start working on overseas opportunities, and then I talked to a few teams, and it was a few that I didn't think it was a good opportunity, and ended up in August, which was super stressful because, you know, it was late in the summer, and not having that job was stressful. But this going into, like, a good opportunity, went to Spain back then, and I was in the second division, the LEB, which was, you know, a really good league back in 2005, and went over there and just never looked back.
Well, what was that process like for you vetting and a team overseas? Was there help from Virginia? Pete Gillen have anything, like, connections over there, anything?
Nah, I mean, like, when school was done, you know, Pete wasn't there. Like, they hired Lato and he was around. Like, when I was there for those 3 weeks, Lato was there. And yeah, I mean, like, it was just like me and my agent working on it. Like, he had some guys who were already overseas, so he kind of had a feel for the markets. And, you know, for me, it was just about being in the right situation. And once we figured out, you know, you can go to the LEB and then progress up higher and higher, it was like, that was a no-brainer. Mm-hmm. So even though, like, the team at the time hadn't been around that long, like, they had been in that division for, like, 2 years, you know, we got lucky. We ended up winning the LEB and moving up to the first division, ACB. So, you know, I just went into a good situation with that.
And then I was going to say, did you follow Virginia at all in the Lato era at that, or were you just grinding on your own thing at that point?
No, I did. You know, as long as there were guys there that I knew, like, personally, like, I always followed. And I always watch as much as I can, you know, even now. But I did watch Lato, like, Sean and JR, while they were still there, like, I watched a lot of those games.
And what did you think of their careers by the end of it, in terms of what they were able to accomplish, getting, you know, they lost to Tennessee, JR twists his ankle. Did you watch any of that? Yeah,
I did. You know, we used to travel with our laptops and just open them up and log on and try to catch the games in the middle of the night. But I was happy for them. I was a little jealous because, one, they got to play in the new arena, which, you know, that's the selling point when they recruit you. Like, yeah, we're building this new arena to be done before you leave. It was still a parking lot when I left.
I know that was quite a game. That was quite an opening, too. You really just missed on that. Like,
yeah, I just missed on that. But, you know, I was happy for them that they were able to, you know, find that success and get to the tournament and do well. You know, like, two great guys. You know, I was happy for them.
And what about a guy like Jason Kane, who came in, became a fan favorite by the end of his career, but when he came in, he didn't get any minutes. We didn't know much about him. Then he goes on to be a great contributor. Did you see that coming?
Yeah, I mean, like, Jason was a unique player. Like, he was 6'10", but, like, at the time when he first came, like, he wanted to be a wing player. You know what I mean? And I think guys really didn't know what they had and didn't know how to use him.
Right.
And, you know, he was versatile where he could move around on the perimeter and athletic at the rim. So I think they didn't take advantage of that early on. But it was good to see him develop into, you know, a solid player and have a good career, you know, after UVA too. So that was good to see.
Absolutely. And then, so Sean goes on to have quite a career at Virginia, you could say. You said you kind of knew right away that first summer, but did you see that brewing in terms of like, oh, this guy's a little different?
Yeah, you could see it. I mean, from the time we actually started playing, like, you could see it. And you could tell, like, it was there. He always wanted to put in extra work. So you could feel it, you know. It was a little different from, you know, some of the other guys. And I remember we used to always have camps in the summertime, and we would play at the end of the camp. And this was the one time we were playing in front of the campers. Uh-huh. And, man, Sean destroyed TJ. I was like, oh, my gosh. I couldn't believe it. And I was like, okay. This guy is going to be a different type of player. And so, I wasn't sure, you know, like how it would, you know, work, you know, after I left, but, you know, he stayed with it and ended up being, you know, one of the best to do it.
Yeah, he made it work. He definitely made it work. I was going to say this, we'll go through a few images. I got some other ones, but this, I had this, you signed this for me at 1-1. Do you remember this against Sean? May, you going up, blocking him. So appreciate you signing that. People think I'm a fair weather fan. Nah, we've been doing this.
Been doing it.
That's nice.
That's sweet though. Look at that. And what about your tattoo game? Explain your, as an Asian man, what you got Asian characters on your arm. Explain that to us. How did that come about?
You know, I used to love Marcus Camby, man, growing up. I was like, man, that's cool what he got on his arm. And, you know, that's how it came about. Yeah, I mean.
Do you remember? Where did you get that tattoo done? Was it in Charlottesville or was it in?
No, I had that. I got that done when I was like 18 in Delaware.
Okay. 2015.
2015. Yeah, that's the Israeli Cup.
So, how long have you been there in Israel at this point?
At this point, that was my fourth year.
Okay.
I had been there. Yeah, that was my fourth year being there. I ended up being there for six.
Yeah, I feel like you were there a while. Was that your longest stint as a pro?
Yeah, I mean, it's rare for guys to spend that much time with one team in Europe. But, I mean, you're starting to see it more now, you know, with high-level guys. And it was good. You know, it's like the second home over there. I love Israel.
All right, so Mark and I's friend, JD, Moji Masala owner, was the scout for Maccabi. So he spoke very highly of you, which I think is pretty cool. And then here's this next one. It says Shaka Smart's 2013 Coaches Clinic, Pete Gillen. Zone offense special sets. I just wanted to show Dougie this. He's not here. He's not even looking. I just thought you'd get a kick out of this one. And then we talked about him for a minute already. Todd Billett. Where did he end up playing after after UVA? Did he continue playing?
I believe he went to like Switzerland for like a year, maybe. But I don't think he played long. I think he might have played for 1 year.
And how about these jerseys? What did you honestly think of these when they handed them to you?
Man, they were and one.
Yeah.
And then they gave us something that you never saw us wear. They gave us like these bright orange, like velour sweatsuits. I was like, I gave it to my dad. I was like, I'm never wearing this. No, usually like dads wear anything because you want to support your child. You're like, I'll wear this. I was like, you can have it. I didn't even take out the package. I was like, you got this.
Wait a minute. As a dad who loves getting gear, did your dad wear it?
Yeah. He didn't wear it like all as one, but he wore the jacket.
And was that a thing? Or were you guys like, come on, can't we just get Nike? Or was it like, all right, and one? They had the mixtape tour prior to that. So was there a little bit of like, oh, this is kind of cool, or no?
Nah, we wanted Nike, man. Yeah. But you know what? Like at the time, like, you know, Nike goes off of levels. And right. When we got Nike my senior year, they didn't give us as much gear as N1 did.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I was thinking. Like,
and for us, it's about volume. Like, we want good. We want Nike, but we want a lot of Nike.
Right. I mean, when Nike finally did come, the jerseys changed. Everything looked a little different. It's kind of like more traditional looking. So, I think a lot of fans were happy to see us get out of this. Whatever you, I don't even know what you call that, but
yeah, they were also heavy though. Like even the Nike ones we had were pretty heavy. Like that's just the uniforms back then, I guess. But I had mine on maybe a few years ago. I had a picture of it. And one, it was like a 3X. It was huge. And it weighed like 8 pounds.
That's awesome.
Yeah, those things were heavy. What's the picture I missed, TW? I was on here.
This one.
He's saying Atlanta X. Good thing he's got the challenge.
I wish I could remember some more, man.
Because like, no, Dev, there's a secret here. There weren't any. I've been to games. Y'all ain't have any plays, man.
I want to know if he talked about a strategy of calling timeouts during that clinic.
Should I tell Devin my story? Is it old by now?
No, tell it. I don't think Devin's
heard. Go ahead, tell it.
So I don't know if you ever met Willie Dersh, who played before you, New York guy, McDonald's All-American. Long story short, he graduated. We go down to a game, and they're playing NC State. Like Virginia's 4, NC State 7. Mm-hmm. Like real game, you know, high level, U-Haul, the whole thing. And Willie played for Pete for 1 or 2 years. Long story short, the game comes, like, we're up by, like, 1 or down by 2 or whatever, and it's just, like, there's no plays. Virginia's just going. And so we lose by, like, 5 to, damn, TW. Who's the great player out of New York to play for NC State? I'm drawing a blank.
Which one? Ernie Myers, Julius Hodge?
Julius Hodge.
Anyhow, we lose. After the game, we all go to Bryant Hall, hanging out. Went out for a couple beers, the whole thing. I sit down with his assistant coach, and Pete comes in, and he's like, "Hey, Doug. Hey, Willie. How you doing? Great to see you." And, you know, being his usual funny stuff, self making jokes, which is fine. He's cool. He's an awesome guy, great guy. But I'm like, "Coach, can I ask you a question, man?" And Willie Dersh starts kicking me under the table, like, "Fresh, don't do it. Fresh, don't do it." I'm like, "No." Now, coach, do you guys like have any plays on your team? Like, do you run a play? Like, say 1, 2 box something, and he makes a joke of it. I'm like, I'm not kidding, dude. Y'all don't have any plays. And Willie just wants to kill me the whole time. That's why I was baiting you into the Atlanta X. I love that one though.
I'm gonna get you this book for Christmas, Fresh. I'm gonna get this book for you. I don't know how long it is. Based on what I heard, it's not gonna be a long book, so you can get through it pretty quick. But I'm gonna get it for you.
And we'll zone get offense and special sets.
And then this was my next question for you. Most underrated ever. I've got you on here, so you can't pick yourself. But on this side, we got Jace Kane, Elton Brown, Majestic Matt, Mayensay, Jason Clark, Ahsan Sen, Adam Hall, Travis Watson, Todd Billett, Keith Friel, Gary Forbes, Gus Gerard, Jamal Robinson, Keith Jennifer. Any of these guys?
I'll say Travis, probably. He doesn't get appreciated enough, probably, because he – for his size, rebounding, his numbers are still up there in the rebounds. And I feel like it's just all about timing and how the team is doing, you know, like how long you're remembered.
All right.
A guy like Travis was really good. I feel like Elton as well. Like, Elton was really good. It just, you know, we didn't have good teams. We didn't do well, put it like that.
Yeah, it's kind of a shame. Elton Brown was another guy that you could just dump the ball down low and just have him go to work. We really haven't had a guy like that since him, I feel like. That really, it was like a pure post player, those two guys leaving.
When Travis was playing, he was definitely not underrated or underappreciated. I think through the years he has been. He reminded me of like of a left-handed Moses Malone, the way he worked, man.
I mean, he's undersized for a big guy, but you couldn't tell.
I love
it. Played huge.
Yep.
And then here, you talked about it for a minute, following this team. And you were recruited by UMBC. What was that emotion like for you when you saw this game go down?
You know what? Like, this was like my first year not playing. So, like, this was my first time coming back and seeing a game live. I came down to, like, UNC and went to the ACC tournament. But I went back to Israel for a ceremony, so I missed the game. And when I woke up and saw, like, all these text messages, I already knew what it was.
Oh, no.
Right. And I'm flying back. I look at it. I'm flying back. I come into Newark. I got my Virginia hat on. And, like, a taxi dude is, like, cracking jokes. I was mad. Okay. But, like, I was mad at the jokes. I'm like,
right.
You know, I felt for the team because – it's a one game, like anything can happen. And all it takes is guys to get hot and, you know, they went small. There's nothing you could do at that point once they got hot. But yeah, I mean, I felt for the team because I thought they were going to do really well.
Yeah, you're talking about your cell phone blowing up. I called it like the reverse of lottery. Like, I'm getting texts from motherfuckers. I'm like, who is this? Somebody hasn't texted me in 10 years and they want to talk to me about this game now? It's like, you win the lotto, right? You got cousins coming from everywhere, the whole thing. That's what happened.
I was saying, then this next one, Minneapolis, a bunch of guys got together. Where did you end up coming to the game?
I was at the semifinal.
Okay.
So I came to the semifinal. Yeah. So, like, it was the end of the season when I was in Phoenix. So we played the next day in Dallas. No, we played in Houston. So I flew from the semifinal back to Houston. And then we were flying from Houston to Dallas, and, like, there were no flights for me to get back from the final game, so I didn't go.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, but I wanted to be there, man. So it was
amazing at
the semifinal because you couldn't hear that whistle blow.
Yep. Who were you hanging out with in Minneapolis? We were all out there, man.
So I came out. I got there like just in time for the game.
Okay.
And like chopped it, and I had a guy there that met me there, and ran into Norm and Corey and all those guys and Mace. But you know, I had to get out of there quick because I had to get back to Houston.
All right. I got one more photo before you get to your pro career, and this leads right into it. You and Sylvan Landisberg, another UVA guy. I remember watching y'all's games, and you had that like preseason run where you played a bunch of NBA teams.
Yeah.
What was it like? Did you guys talk about Virginia at all? I mean, you didn't overlap, but was that a bond that you guys were able to rekindle over?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, we talked about it. Sales. One of my guys. I'll probably see Sil like in a few days because he has a place here in Philly.
Oh, that's awesome.
But
tell him about our show. We'd love to have him on. Tell him, plug for us. For
sure, I will. And I'm sure Sil got stories for days.
Yeah, sure.
But we used to talk about it. You know, he talked about like, you know, his situation with why he left and stuff like that. So
right.
You know, it was just interesting to see because, you know, Seal is doing really well now, especially, you know, in Europe and in China. So it's good that guys have different avenues to play because
Absolutely. You
didn't see that back then. Like, you couldn't go on social media and see, like, guys in Israel, in Spain,
right,
playing and doing well. Like back then, I didn't know.
Yeah.
Like I went over there. I didn't have a computer my first year. I used to call my wife. Like back then, we were dating, but I would call her on a payphone. I had like a calling card. I would go to the payphone and call her, or hope to get on Instant Messenger on my Sidekick. That's how I survived.
Crazy. Times have definitely changed now, where it's much more like transparent in terms of like guys have options overseas, and it's very well known. I mean, you look at the behind me, I got Anthony Gill's jersey from Kimmy. It's pretty cool. So then walk us through your pro career then. You said you started in Spain and you worked your way through.
Yeah. So my first 2 years were in Spain with the same team in San Sebastian. So we won the LEB as like the fifth seed. So back then the two teams that go to the final would move up to the ACB. So we ended up winning the quarterfinals and the semifinals 3-0, 3-0, and then won the final and moved up. So I resigned there. We had like a rocky season, but like that was like the eye opener for me to really understand like the power in Europe, because we went from this team in the second division to now you got guys who are getting paid. Well, I'm not. And I'm looking at them like, you're holding me accountable for like the team. You putting all the pressure on us as Americans, but like these other guys are breaking bank.
Right.
And so I moved from there to Avellino in Italy, which is probably 30 minutes from Naples. And spent a year there, had a great year. We won the Italian Cup, which had never been done for this team. And basically there, like survived off of, there was an army base, a NATO base there. So that was like its own American city in the middle of Italy. So we used to go there all the time. And that's how we kind of survived and kept that connection back home. And then I left Italy and went to Turkey and played for Fenerbahce there in Turkey. Spent 1 year there. My oldest daughter was born, like my wife moved over. That was the first time as a family being in Europe. And we had my oldest daughter in Turkey. So she was born in Istanbul.
Oh, wow. That's awesome.
Yeah. Left there and went to Greece. So I went to a team, Panellinios, a team that doesn't exist anymore, went bankrupt in Greece. And we did well. We were in Euro Cup, went to the Final Four, and we lost in the semifinals, but did well there. It was first team all Euro Cup. Yeah, so my youngest two were born in Israel.
So when he leaves Maccabi to come coach LeBron James, how did you hear about that?
So like in our playoffs, we heard that like there was a chance he was going to go to the NBA, because he had flew to the States because he had a death in his family. Uh-huh. But like on his way back, he met with Steve Kerr in the airport, like to interview for the head assistant at Golden State.
Okay.
And so we thought he was going to take that job. And then out of nowhere, he gets offered a Cleveland job. And then out of nowhere, LeBron comes back.
Right. He's just, LeBron fell into his lap, basically.
But yeah. So like he wasn't supposed to coach the team like with LeBron. Like they didn't know. They wanted him to coach the young guys and help them develop. And then LeBron said, you know what, I'm coming back. And from there, like, he really didn't stand a chance.
Did you keep up with him during that time? Did you hear from him, or was he just on his grind?
No, I mean, like, I would talk to him from time to time, you know, through text or email. And even now, I'll reach out to him from time to time to see how he's doing.
Oh, that's awesome. And then, what are you up to now? You're coaching?
Yeah, so I took a year off when I retired. Just wanted to relax, decompress, stay at home with the family. And then I got a job in Phoenix doing player development.
How'd that happen?
I had a, I knew the head coach. So me and the head coach had a good relationship, and, you know, he gave me an opportunity there. And then, you know, it just, it's unpredictable in this profession. And once they fired, you know, the guy who hired all of us, and, you know, the writing was on the wall that eventually we would be gone. And then last summer, you know, I got an opportunity to be, you know, the head assistant in Iowa in the G League, which is, I love it, man. Like, the G League is a grind. It almost takes me back to my JUCO days.
You know, yeah, I was just going to say, it's like that.
That's cool. Yeah, it's a grind, like, and, like, you truly are making an impact on these guys, like, helping these guys get better and realizing, like, everything that's out there, whether it's NBA, Europe, you know, just you get a chance to be hands-on every day, you know, and that's something you don't get, you know, in a 15-guy staff in the NBA.
So what is your advice to these guys in the G League when you've played, had this illustrious career internationally, and now you're coming back and talking to these kids that are just fighting that dream of the NBA? Like, how's that conversation go?
You know, a lot of it is just about being open, you know what I mean? Like, guys don't realize, like, the opportunities that are out there, and they gotta understand how to be professionals, you know? Like, that's, you're viewed as a professional, like, on and off the floor. And, you know, my biggest advice to a lot of the guys is, like, you know, sometimes you'll go into a basketball situation and it just doesn't fit, you know? But make that fit about basketball, not about, like, your character and how you are as a person off the floor.
Right.
So,
right.
Like, that's what a lot of guys have to understand. Like, that's impacted. You know, wherever you go, they're going to reach out to where you played before and ask how you are treating everybody, from the players to the equipment guy. Like, they're going to ask these questions because they're doing their research and, you know, really trying to get an insight to who you are as a person. So you got to be able to handle that responsibility to represent yourself the right way.
That's interesting to me, man, because on the scale, you're dealing with really young dudes now, right?
Yeah.
Like, you're playing pro basketball in Europe at age 30, which, relatively speaking, is a grown man, right?
Yeah.
And so what is that kind of like? Because you're telling guys 35-year-old lessons, 40-year-old lessons to, like, a 20-year-old dude in the G League, 21-year-old.
You know, a lot of it is, it takes time. You know, like, a lot of these guys, initially, they might not be open to receive, you know, that kind of info. So, like, they'll start to ask questions because they don't understand, like, anything about Europe. They're looking at me like, okay, you play basketball in Europe. You know, like, luckily I can still play and get on the floor.
Right.
And, but, you know, over time, I just feel like they'll see, like, friends go to Europe and they'll hear more about it, you know, whether it's conversations to their agents or whatever. And, you know, they'll seek out, you know, kind of that info, you know, privately, especially. But it's just something I wish I had, you know, coming out of college and going over to Europe my first year. Right. I was the only American on the team for probably 3 or 4 months because they cut the other guy after a month. And so I was kind of like just making it work on my own, trying to figure it out, which was a good experience for me because it forced me into the culture. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
When you go to Europe, you got to be able to adapt to different lifestyles, different cultures. And I think that's the hardest part.
Right. But especially if you're in Europe, right? Like, your first job on the, whatever series 2 team in Spain, a lot of the guys were older, right?
Yeah, a lot of,
like,
guys
grown are older. Men with kids, etc. And you're like out of UVA, like, let's go.
Yeah, like, a lot of guys are older, and then, like, a lot of them really didn't speak English that well.
Yeah,
you know, like, the higher level you go up, the more you find guys who speak English really well because, right, like, they grew up in academies or they just been around more Americans. And our coach barely spoke English. Like, one of the players used to translate for me.
Wow.
What he was saying. And, it, you know, it forced me to figure it out because I didn't have, like, another American to kind of lean on.
Right.
So, you know, it's crazy because I didn't know about like siestas and stuff like that. My first weekend in Spain, I used to be pissed every day. I'm coming out of practice trying to go to the store and it's closed.
Right, right. and they go to dinner at like 11 p.m. at night, right? The party starts at like midnight.
Yeah, if they want to go out, you can't go out before one.
That's wild.
Yeah.
Outside of having immediate impact on the players in the G League, what's the biggest difference between the NBA and the G League?
I think the NBA is just—it's more hands on everybody, you know, just like from a staff point of view. Like you have so many guys who have different responsibilities. In Phoenix, when I was there, luckily we didn't have like a huge staff, but you might see some teams who have 10 guys in the video room. You have like Philly has like 10 player development guys. So there's so many moving parts and really you just don't have a voice and don't really have a chance to develop. Yeah. You know, like guys don't understand like the G League is development for coaches too. Development for coaches, development for trainers, development for front office guys, the game.
Yeah, refs.
You know, experience, you know what I mean? And that's the only way you can get better. You know, that's what I like about the G League is because like I get more reps in front of the team and my voice matters every day. So just bringing that impact and having that responsibility like day in and day out to know like what I do is really going to impact the team. Like that's something that that's more valuable than just being, you know, on an NBA coaching staff.
What's your future look like and what would you like it to look like?
You know, I eventually want to be a head coach, whether it's in the G League or wherever, you know, right now, you know, I'll be in Iowa again next year and, you know, just building on, you know, what I've already, the experience I've already gained and just getting better, you know, coaching and being in front of the team, but you never know, you know what I mean? Like before I got into coaching professionally, like I considered coaching high school, I thought about college, but you know, at the time, like that just wasn't the best fit for me. And moving forward, you never know, you know, you run across the right situation where you feel it's right that whether it's college, high school, professionally, you know, you got to make that choice.
What if somebody calls from like Barcelona calls from Europe, like we want you to run our team? Would your family ever Did you ever think about that, being over there? Like, let's just set up shop here in Israel or Spain or whatever.
No, I mean, like, I love it, but I wasn't staying.
Okay, you got home.
I'll go back and visit. Like, this is our home base. Like, my parents are still in Delaware, like 40 minutes from me. My wife's parents are, her mom is 5 minutes from us. You know, so
okay,
like this is our home base. All our people are here.
Right. So you're not going native. I get it.
Nah, but I mean, if the right situation came along in Europe, you know, it'd be something to consider, especially in a place right. like Israel that we already know, you know, like it was a big adjustment for my family moving back here because my kids only knew Israel. You know what I mean? Yeah, especially my oldest.
How old when they came back? How old are your kids?
So 11, 6, and 4. I have 3 girls.
Right. Right.
And so 11, 6, and 4, we've been back, this is what, our third year, so she was, and we had been for 6 years, so all her friends were there. I mean, she had friends here, but it wasn't the same because we were only here during the summertime for 2 months at a time.
Yeah,
that's big.
So we go there, and you know, that was like home for her. Coming back here, we didn't know whether we wanted to put her in private school, send her to public school, because she was always in that private setting that was right. multicultural in Europe. Yep. You know what I mean? Her school, you had kids from Croatia, from everywhere, you know? So it was a big adjustment for them coming back. And that was part of the reason why I wanted to take a year off and do nothing.
Yeah, that's cool. Great for them, man.
So what has this break been like for you pandemic wise?
It's been better now. When it first happened, you know, we stayed in Iowa for at least a month, you know, and then we ended up packing up and driving back to our place here because, you know, we were in an apartment there in Iowa. The kids just needed to run around and have more space. And we just knew it would be easier here because we live close to stuff where we can get stuff delivered pretty easily here. So, I mean, like, since we've been here, like, they have us doing, like, scouting for the draft. So it's just been, like, you know, video work and stuff like that while I'm here just to stay busy. And just spending the time with the family.
That's awesome. And well, what are your thoughts on G League now offering big contracts to these high school kids? Is that good, a good thing, or is that, you know, going to change the landscape for your job?
No, I mean, I think it is good because I think at least it keeps them, you know, in the NBA system. You know, you have guys going to Australia, guys going, I think, like Brandon Jennings was the first guy to go to Europe.
Yeah.
And I think it keeps them here. And I think it's good. You know, truthfully, I think guys should be able to go straight to the NBA. If you're, if you can get drafted, then you should be able to go. So to force them to go to college and just take random classes for 6 months, then leave anyway, might as well go to the G League.
Yeah.
It'll be interesting to see how they build the team around those guys because you put vets on the team, they want to play. And then they have to defer and try to help develop these guys. It's going to be interesting to see.
I was going to say, how, like, in terms of the guys trying to get to the league, when you have tiers in all these places, right? You got the two-way guys that take priority over the regular, and then there's, like, borderline guys that are trying to make a league. And then now you've got this. I wonder what that does for the dynamic of the locker room in the G League. Is that, obviously, we don't know until it happens, but I can't imagine it's easy.
Yeah, I mean, like, the G League is interesting because you have the two-way guys. You have, like, Exhibit 10 guys on average that they give, like, $50K to.
Right.
And then you have guys who are on assignment.
Right.
And, like, those guys are priority. You know, these guys might not practice with you, but if they show up on game day, like, they're playing.
Right.
So that's something that these guys have to be able to adjust to. And that's the thing about the G League. Like, you can game plan all you want, but your roster can change in 30 minutes.
Oh, yeah, that's wild. You know,
so I think it's going to be interesting to see, you know, how these guys are. I think they should put a bunch of young guys with young guys. But guys in the G League, man, there's some guys out here hungry, man. They want jobs. So
and
it's
what,
not going to be easy.
What about the fan support for G League? Do you see that changing and with this change and paying these higher paid guys to come in and like these one and dones and outcome the G League? You think that'll change the fan support system? Because it's kind of weak.
I think it's all about location. You know, with that team being in LA, I think they'll be a hot topic. You know, they'll be on all the news cycles. So there'll be interest with that. You know, if they were based in Sioux Falls, South Dakota, probably not, you know. With them being based in L.A., I think there'll be a lot of interest in guys checking them out.
What about the fan support for Iowa when you guys are at home? Is it like a decent crowd or is it hit or miss?
It's hit or miss. It depends. Our arena probably seats like 15,000. But the thing about the G League is you never really practice where you play.
Right.
But we get support, you know, at certain times of the year.
You mentioned that you've been watching film recently.
Mm-hmm.
Have you had a chance to see any UVA guys? Have you had a chance to see Momedy or Jay Huff or some other, or Braxton Keys?
Nah, I mean, like right now, like since probably we're not scouts, they have us like looking at a lot of guys who are like G League guys who would be under the radar.
Gotcha.
Not a lot of the high level guys.
Interesting.
Doug Smith. I'm still trying to be league, Mark.
Me and you both be a great backcourt. Any other ACC guys you've been looking at? or is it like lower level leagues?
Lower level league so far. I mean, this round is probably like the highest level of guys I've got so far. Like we got a guy from St. Joe's, and I think I got a guy from, I had a guy from Auburn before, like a small guard, but it hasn't been, you know, a lot of high major guys.
What about the guys overseas? Do you get those coming that you're aware of?
I don't know. I mean,
or do they even look at that as an option?
Right. Good question, Tito.
For the G League, I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know.
I was curious if, like, a Euro guy is thinking, should I go to the G League, try to make the NBA, or should I stay here and play? I don't know. I guess it doesn't make sense.
They probably stay. They make some money. They make good money, right?
Yeah.
They're going to get seen, too.
Right.
What do you say?
If they're having good years there.
Yeah, they're going to get
seen. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. You know, people, they have agents. The American agents have European counterparts. Right, so they, those guys, those counterparts over there are going to tell the American agents, hey, this guy can really play.
Yeah. I mean, you figure there's so many guys in the front office. Like, you have GMs and scouts who go to Europe multiple times a year to catch, like, especially the big events, whether it's under 18s or EuroLeague Final Fours or Spanish Cup tournaments. Like, guys are always somewhere watching. So, if you're out there, there's a good chance that you'll be seen.
Yeah. It's a big change of pace.
Dougie, we ready?
Hey, Dougie, your famous question.
Oh, he's definitely not ready. All right, we do this every guest, and you get put on the spot a little bit. So University of Virginia, you got to do your Mount Rushmore basketball players. And I'll give you five. It's not by position.
Okay.
It's the five that you think are the greatest of all time, UVA hoops.
UVA hoops, yeah. I mean, I'm kind of lost with this one. But I'll say, I mean, Ralph is always on there. Corey Alexander.
I like it.
He agrees with that, by the way. Go ahead.
Stiff is on there for sure.
Good answer. Yes, sir.
And then I'll move it up a little bit just to, I don't know. I'll say Roger Mason.
I like it.
And Brogdon.
Solid. Can't argue. Can't argue the list, right, Mark?
That was a good list. That's a good list.
Good list. We got a lot of cheaters out there that like to go Kyle Guy, Ty Jerome, DeAndre Hunter for one
spot.
But we let that go. We let that go. We like those guys.
Dougie, you know, when you're not on for whatever reason, because you're working or you have something else, priority, excuse me, I don't let that go. T-Dougie.
we put one. That's three heads on our Mount Rushmore.
Yeah, I know. It's hard for me, man.
You're a lot more lenient than we are.
Yeah, no, those dudes, come on, man. They got something none of us have, right?
That is very true. I mean.
Five ain't seven. Five is five.
Yeah.
Five is five. No, you're right. That's a good point.
You guys
didn't ask Kie, though.
Yeah, that's true. We totally forgot
history. Those guys, the new guys, don't know anybody past 2014.
That's true. By the way, Devin, for me, all that matters is you say Brian Stith. Anybody that skips Brian Stith, I have no, I can't do it. I can't.
All right, he's a goat. If you didn't watch,
what you say?
I said if you didn't watch during that era, though, right? I mean, it's like, if you got recruited by Virginia, the first time you knew about Virginia was 2002. I mean,
he's just played in the league, though. So
yeah.
Devin, I'm telling you, he gave it to everybody. It didn't matter.
Yeah.
He showed up for everybody. I can't remember one person got Bryant, and it's because of the coaches, talking about preparation. We prepared for Robert Horry, James Hollywood Robinson at Alabama, And we forgot about a guy named Latrell Sprewell. We didn't talk about him. And he went off. Brian, I'm sure Brian still got his at Alabama, but we didn't know.
Yeah.
Everybody else, Brian, just boom, got them all, got him.
Well, we appreciate you coming on. We say some of that Pete Gillen stuff is the lost generation because, you know, a lot of people don't remember him, but we'll give you a shout out because you were the man, and we'll make sure people remember you.
Yeah, I appreciate you coming on. Definitely appreciate you guys having me on.
And Devin, I was a little bit worried because I was looking at pictures and looking you up before, and you look hard as shit on the court. I'm like, yo, he's gonna come in here and be like after me, yo. He's like, the coolest, nicest guy, great smile, the whole thing. Look at your pictures on the internet. I'm like, dude, he's a terror.
Hey man, there ain't no friends on the court.
I'm gonna tell you one more. TW does a lot of things, like best hairstyles in the history of the game. You know, best offensive player.
Yeah.
I think Jerry Ratcliffe put one out. The greatest scorers.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
In the history of Virginia, he had everybody up there, and then he had D. Smith. No pictures. So I'm like, damn, Jerry, Doug Smith. Okay. and TW is like fresh. I think that's Devin. Yo, I'm like, I know. This is my own.
You have to do a list of the top players under Lato and Gillen. Right, the forgotten.
That's a good idea.
Yeah, we got to do that one.
Years.
Devin's on
lost,
there for sure.
The loss.
Why? What was your? Tape. I was gonna say, what is your take on that? Like Doug Smith, Jamal, all those guys are like, yo, when Gillen came on, he didn't connect us, the old guys. Did you feel that at all, or were you? Are you oblivious to that when you were on grounds?
How Gillen didn't bring guys back?
Yeah.
Like there. I don't know. I mean, like. He wasn't like openly bringing guys back. I think guys came on their own. You know what I mean?
Right,
Norm and those guys, Roger would come play with us, but he was there. You know, Crotty would come during the season and practice from time to time, randomly. Yep. But I think those guys were around on their own. They weren't there because Gillen asked them to come around.
I've talked to
Gillen maybe once since I left school, so.
Yeah, I was going to ask you that too.
He's not good at that, apparently. Yeah, well, Roger Devin, said
Jeff Jones does a thing every year that we all go to his house. Obviously, not this year.
Mm-hmm.
And you're obviously going to be invited. So bring your guys.
Yeah, let me know. Yeah, I mean, like I always talk to Barry from time to time, Park Hill, and he keeps me in the loop on what's going on. So. When Bennett got the job, like Ron Sanchez reached out to – I know he reached out to me and, like, asked me to come down a lot, but, you know, I just didn't have time. I was having kids and
– living your life.
Right, living my life. I just didn't have time to come down. But when I came down to catch Carolina, like, having known Jason a little bit, you know, it was open arms when I came down, so it was cool.
So who gives you your tickets when you come? How'd you get Final Four tickets?
I didn't decide I was going until like a day before the game.
Right.
Because I had to leave. So I didn't decide I was going until a day before the game. And then
me either.
Yeah, I asked Barry if he had any and he didn't have any more. So I just bought one and just came down.
Right.
That's tricky. It was a tough one. That was a tough ticket. I mean, even though there was 75,000 of them, it still was tough.
Yeah, exactly.
All right.
Dev, thanks so much for joining.
Man, I appreciate you guys. Definitely.
We'll have to have you come back on sometime. We do like round tables and random things every once in a while, so we'll hit you up if you have time. I'd love to keep you back and bring you back in the Virginia family loop to hear from you every once in a while.
Yeah, let me know. I'll also drop the line for Seal.
Yeah, he's he's one we definitely want to get on because I know he's got some stories.
That might be a good one for you to be one of us on, like kick one of us out and you do it with him.
Yeah, that'd be tight.
Bring out the real, you know. I know you're holding back on stories and on the ground.
Appreciate you, man.
Fakes the pass and sends it down with a tomahawk slam. Jerome off the glass, count it, and one, Jim.